Community and Regional Affairs will now come to order. Let the record reflect that Representative Cisna, Representative Newman, Representative Cott, Co-Chair Thomas, Representative Ledoux, and Co-Chair Olson are in attendance. We're also joined at the table by Representative Jewell. And in the audience, I thought I saw Senator Olson. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
And Senator Wilken. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, folks.
And am I missing anybody? We'll continue today with SB 171 NPRA, the grant program. We got a lot to cover today. We lost an hour on Tuesday, unfortunately. But first up, I'd like to call representative of the department, Mr. Klo. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. For the record, my name is Al Klo. I'm Deputy Commissioner for Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. We'll try not to belabor some of the points. I think when we left on Tuesday, there were several questions that were put to the department by the co-chair, Rep. Thomas, and Sal Shadler handed that material out here just briefly, detailing the forest receipts program for the Tongass from FY01 through 06. And there's also a table here that provides GF monies that went to the North Slope Borough communities from 00 to 07. And I think finally there were some questions on some recommendations to the department, and I'll try to get to those in a moment. If it pleases the chair, I'd like to speak a little bit to these data that we handed out.
Certainly.
Okay,
thank you.
The Tongass numbers pretty much speak for themselves. And the question is why, I think it was also posed, is why the permanent fund doesn't get a opportunity to go on those resource dollars. And the response would be that the federal law that distributes those dollars to the state is quite specific on where those funds are supposed to be distributed. Right, wrong, or otherwise, that's how we then dole them out. The capital projects for the North Slope communities is a data set that I would caution people to be wary looking at it without looking at it in its totality, and staff is working to provide a more detailed spreadsheet on this. And hopefully we'll get that out by the end of the week and get it to all members and certainly to Senator Wilken. There is a number of funding sources other than NPRA monies that have gone to the North Slope communities. These data that we've passed out today attempt to capture the non-NPRA monies. But when you drill into it, some of the funds are safe communities monies, some are the temporary physical relief monies, some are revenue sharing monies. There's also revenue streams in there and pass through federal dollars by way of ACMP monies. And a lot of these are distributed basically on a formula basis to statewide to recognized communities. So we're working to provide a complete data set that gives a little bit of backup on where these dollars came from and why they went there. This is just the sum total, and the attempt here was to stick with state dollars, not some of the pass-through federal dollars like the ACMP monies. With that said, the department's position on the comments that were on 171 the other day, and we certainly appreciate Senator Wilken's hard work and efforts on moving this issue forward. The NPRA program has been a difficult one for us to administer over the years. Certainly there has been litigation involved in this, and the revenue stream goes up and down, and obviously when it's high, there's an awful lot of interest in the program. With that said, I think the department staff that has been tasked with this has worked within the rules that have been provided to them and tried to do a good job in administering this program, and I firmly believe they have. We've done things internally to try to provide a better program with better support to the communities over the years, consistent with what we're able to accomplish by regulation. And I think that has made a difference in the quality of projects that come down to us, notwithstanding the issues that are brought up on impact or not impact. But with that said, I would like to acknowledge that our staff has worked very hard to try to make this a successful program for the recipients of the dollars. Director Mike Black of Community Advocacy spoke on this issue before the Senate, and the basis of his discussion was that where we get frustrated sometimes at the staff level is on what the definition of impact is. And you know, that's been certainly a discussion around the table here and in others on this. To kind of put it all together, from our perspective, we would very much welcome legislative guidance on what constitutes impact to help our grant staff further define and work with this very important program. However, our position is that the administration of this program should remain an executive branch function within the department as opposed to a legislative committee. Questions, I think the third set of questions that was posed to us was, you know, how would we suggest making this better? And the responses to that are, again, we welcome any legislative input on what the definition of impact is. That would certainly make our job more straightforward. Likewise, because of some of the grant applications deal with specific technical issues that things such as the Department of Fish and Game or the Department of Transportation or others may have specific professional expertise in that our grant staff, who are predominantly grants managers, do not. Perhaps some legislative guidance on participation by those departments in the review process would likewise be of benefit. From time to time, we do get staff from other departments in our review process, but without any statutory oversight, it's a borrowing rather than something they're required to do. I think that's pretty much sums up the department's position.
Representative Ledoux.
With respect to the Tongass Forest receipts, do you administer grants for those receipts?
No, those are a pass-through formula base to the communities. It's similar to state revenue sharing, safe communities money. It's, you know, there's a formula, and we just crank through the formula and cut the checks, basically.
So it's not follow-up? So it's not based upon individual grants where you designate the?
Through the chair, it is not.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Good morning, Deputy Commissioner. Thank you for the information. Last year, I had some money go through the process here to go through the department, and he took 12% off for handling fees. So we're just cutting a check. That's what I said. And it was, so do you charge any handling fees for the Tongass receipts or MPRA?
I would like to defer to my grant supervisor for that.
I saw a head going like this somewhere back there.
My recollection is that is a no.
I can't speak to Tongass.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly in MPRA, we don't
follow up.
And I can follow double check on Tongass, but I'd be very surprised if there's any department cut on that.
Okay, one other just comment on impact. Being a commercial fisherman, when they had the Exxon oil Valdez oil spill, which was several hundred miles from us, that not only impacted me, but the whole state. And, you know, we have not recovered in our fish prices. We had $3.75, I believe, Sheila, something like that, a pound, and we're still struggling to get $1.20, $1.30 back for our fish prices. So I think that was one impact that oil industry, I'm going to blame it on them because it's always easier to pick on them. It's had on the salmon price because of the impact and the on the whole salmon industry. So I don't know how you're going to define impact other than I've seen pictures before and after in the borough area. And also just for a comment, I've seen what clear cuts do to my communities and see what the impacts are and how that money is shared. Not only, as you pointed out in here, you'll see that Juneau gets the lion's share, but I've always said, and I don't mind saying it to the public, is that the largest clear cut in Juneau is the ski area over here, you know. There has not been any commercial harvesting, but yet that shows they got $1 million a year of the Tongass Forest, which seems to only be based on mass of the borough. So thank you. I'm going to go to a meeting at 8:30 because we have some communities interested in formation of boroughs if the Senate bill that has the incentive bill passes, and there's about 8 or 10 municipal mayors in town that are meeting. So I'm going to dart off in about 10 minutes, and I thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be back.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. First, there was an issue brought up that just seems to throw a little shadow on this, and I've talked to some of the folks from up there and part of the state earlier on this, and I just want a clarification on this, and it kind of goes back to, can the apartment address these issues? But apparently there was a cultural center that was approved an operating grant in 2000 or 2002, but the center was never built. How did that happen?
Rep. Newman, through the chair, if I think it would probably be most instructive if I brought Joe Grove up here, who's the supervisor of the grant section, to speak to that specific issue.
Certainly.
Joe.
Yes, my name is Joe Grove, and in response to your question, I was not involved with the program at that time, so I'm kind of looking at it from a historical background, but it's my understanding that a grant was awarded for the construction of a facility, and it was never built for various reasons. There was also a grant awarded that same year for operation of the new facility, but I do want to point out that those funds were never expended. A grant was released. When we went up to take a look at the program and monitor it, we realized what had happened, and so those funds were pulled back. And in fact, they were reprogrammed to help maintain and operate an existing part of the city offices in that community that are used as a community center.
You have a follow-up?
A couple. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, you said that those funds were never expended. When I talked to the folks from up that part of the state, they said that those funds were used on an oil or a gas pipeline, so that they were used in another area, that those were funds were distributed and used on a gas pipeline to hook up houses to natural gas. And this kind of leads me, so just keep that in mind, and I'm going to ask my next question, because this kind of brings it all together, is when you said, well, I wasn't involved. So I don't know, because I wasn't involved there. And so now we have changes in administration that happen with each new governor. How do those changes address how the oversight is affected onto this program? Because now you have new personnel who are always getting shifted around. You have new people looking at it. Is there somebody who's job is to look at this in a consistent basis? Is it, are else things like this are going to continue to happen? Or when you have to sit in front of a committee and address issues that are questionable, even if it's a very good program and there's just one or two things like that, it throws a shadow on it. And now, you know, the committee that's supposed to have oversight is sitting here telling me, well, I wasn't involved in it, I don't know. And then you also told me a different answer from what the people who received the grant told me. So how do you explain that?
Well, when I said I wasn't involved with the program, I wasn't responsible for administration of the MPRA program. That is now part of my responsibilities, and it became that I want to say maybe in 2001, if I remember correctly, or 2002. I've worked with the department for almost 30 years in administering grant programs, and that was one of the reasons that our director asked me to oversee this program. We administer a lot of state and federal programs, and we have a lot of systems in place to ensure accountability. I'm not going to pretend that we have everything all ironed out with NPRA, but we have certainly made what I consider to be significant improvements in the last few years in identifying accountability issues and working with the staff of the communities that receive these projects. We visit the communities fairly regularly and take a look at the, you know, the facilities that are being operated or maintained with these funds, or we receive one thing that a lot of people don't understand about the program too is that the projects are cost reimbursable, and when communities request payment, they submit copies of all financial documentation to my staff for review before we approve a payment, which doesn't 100% ensure accountability, but it certainly it helps. And that with our on-site visits, I think, has been a significant improvement.
Representative Sussman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're certainly familiar in all of our districts with reappropriations and the fact that money gets earmarked as being for one use, and sometimes it just doesn't come through. And so I'd really like to get a clear feeling on this, because I certainly don't want you to blame for something that didn't happen. On the issue of the cultural center, was that funding ever actually used for something totally different?
Not to my knowledge. If I'm not mistaken, and I administer thousands of grants, but as I recall, it was reprogrammed, and it remained with the city or for the benefit of the community involved to support their existing city offices and portion of that that is a cultural center.
Representative Ledoux.
Thank you. During your experience administering thousands of grants, I'm just wondering whether there's ever been an occasion where such grants have been reviewed by the state legislature.
Legislative audit? Absolutely. They reviewed the majority of our NPRA grants last year, in fact.
Follow-up? I didn't mean legislative audit, excuse me. What I was talking about was in a situation like this proposed by this bill.
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you.
I wonder if you could tell us what changes that you've made in the last 12 or 24 months that might address some of Senator Wilkins' concerns.
Well, as I said, in terms of accountability, we have very detailed grant agreements that outline all the responsibilities of the grantees, everything from requirements to maintain insurance, the kind of accounting records they need to maintain, reporting requirements back to the department on a quarterly basis, both financial reporting and progress reporting. And in fact, we're in the process of trying to improve upon the progress reporting so that we get a little bit more detail so that we can address some of the questions and concerns that have been raised. We've also made a point of visiting some of the communities more frequently. That is a challenge due to the cost of traveling up north, but we've also implemented workshops that we conduct at least once a year on the program and invite all communities that on the North Slope that are involved with it to explain the requirements, to explain our expectations.
Where do you conduct those, Barrow or Anchorage?
Generally
or?
In Barrow, yes.
Thanks.
Rep. Olson, that, if I may, that was an issue that we felt very strongly about when we came on board here a few years ago. There had been previous policy to not actively reach out to the communities in region to both front load and administer the grants, and that was one of the first things that was changed to get staff up there, which they welcomed the opportunity to work hands-on with the people and host these meetings in region, not in Anchorage.
I'd like the record to reflect that Representative Newman joined us about 2 minutes after the meeting started and didn't get credit for being here, but
believe I did.
Oh, okay. Well, you got it twice then.
Thank you, Chair.
Are there any other Representative Salmon?
Just indicate the record that I.
Oh, okay.
I do, so.
I apologize. Yeah. And we've been joined by Representative Salmon also. Anybody else? Thank you very much.
Thank you. And as I say, when we get this data set a little more spelled out, we'll make sure it's available to everyone. Thank you.
I think we're going to switch over to representatives of the North Slope Borough and the impacted villages, and I believe we'll start with Mayor Itta. Morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Co-Chair Olson, and members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be here and an honor. I'm Edward Saganita, the mayor of the North Slope Borough, and I wish to say a few words here regarding Senate Bill 171 and amending the NPRA grant program. Now that you've had a chance to hear the sponsor and the administration talk about SB 171's proposed changes to the NPRA Impact Aid Grant Program, I appreciate this opportunity for people from the NPRA communities to tell you what it's like in the places that are directly affected by industry activity. As you know, the NPRA Grant Program was born 25 years ago after these petroleum reserve lands were transferred to the Navy from the Navy to the Department of Interior with the intent of pursuing commercial development. Senator Stevens was aware that activity in the NPRA had already caused a lot of impacts in the local communities, and he wanted them to receive a healthy share of the non-federal revenues from development. It wasn't Senator Stevens' desire to wrap these villages up in complex arguments about what constitutes a direct impact or an indirect impact. This is a recent invention by the bill sponsor. Senator Stevens' intention, as it was expressed in the federal law that created the program, was very simple. He recognized that community impacts had occurred in the past and would continue to occur into the future. He knew that these lands were the most important subsistence territory for the residents of the North Slope, and he wanted the impacted communities to receive benefits at a level that corresponds to the development. The obvious and simple way to do that, as it is established in federal law, is to let impact aid rise and fall with revenues. The revenue levels would give a general indication of current and future activity and a general indication of impacts. The Impact Aid Program would give communities a way to respond and to prepare for the increasing levels of impacts that were likely to occur. And that is exactly what is happening. From 1987 to 1995, there was some revenue generated from existing leases. Then it went quiet for a few years before the big sales in 1999, 2002, 2004 took place. Suddenly, more than 2.8 million acres are leased, and with the price of oil so high, the industry is really eager. There will also be a lease sale later this year that offers the area north of Teshukpuk Lake for the first time. If you want to talk about impacts to the communities, Teshukpuk Lake is a good place to start. That area is a tremendous magnet for waterfowl of all kinds as a nesting and molting area, and birds come from thousands of miles away in the spring. The Teshukpuk caribou herd is also based there, migrating in and out through a narrow neck of land between the eastern edge of the lake and the ocean. In terms of subsistence, the Teshukpuk area is the focal point of the whole region, and all four of our NPRA communities harvest from these wildlife populations while they are in the Teshukpuk region or during their migratory travels. If you want to make people nervous on the North Slope, just tell them that the industry is gearing up to move into the Tushakpuk area, especially the most sensitive area north of the lake, where the greatest concentrations of wildlife are found. Well, that's exactly what we were told by BLM recently when they released their record of decision on Northeast NPRA last month. I bring this up because I think it's a very good illustration of the way impacts can take effect. When you are a subsistence hunter, you don't need an oil rig next to your campsite before there's an impact. You don't need a drilling rig or a road or a seismic crew. For some of the most serious impacts, all you need is a threat, and I'm prepared to talk about that. The area around Tushakpuk Lake, especially on the north side of it, is a subsistence breadbasket for residents of the North Slope. When I talk to people in the villages and Barrow, the idea that these lands are about to be leased isn't just a bit of worrisome news. It hits them in the stomach, literally. It is a threat to their culture because it is a threat to activities that are at the core of their culture. I think you understand that this is not just about hunting. It's about preserving activities that make our culture possible. For the native people up north, the new threat around Tushakpuk Lake is one more threat to the continuation of their culture. So, people in all of the NPRA communities are experiencing a new impact before the ground has been even leased. This is the nature of impacts in a cross-cultural situation. They are not always easy to understand or even to identify because they are created in the context of one culture and received in the context of another culture. The more you try to tie specific actions to specific effects, the more you will miss some of the most profound impacts. These are the ones that come from a feeling deep inside our people that their traditional hunting grounds are gradually being taken away for another use, a use that will disrupt the wildlife we depend on. Disrupting the wildlife disrupts the people. And while it takes time to figure out how much the wildlife are affected, it doesn't take any time for people to feel worried, threatened, and stressed. That's why the villages apply for youth programs and recreation facilities. They are trying to create alternative activities for kids in a culture that is under stress. They apply for school counselors, anti-drug programs, because they're trying to head off some of the social problems that arise when a culture feels that it is under siege. NPRA is clearly not the only source of stress on our kids and community, and we recognize that. But it is one source. And with the BLM's decision to open up the Tushakpuk lands that we have always protected, it is a lot bigger stress than it used to be. I believe it is this kind of widespread social impact that is hard, so hard, to get your arms around, hard to quantify, and was anticipated by the federal law. It is the kind of impact that stays under the radar, but it is very real and very disturbing. It's the undercurrent that affects everyone, and I stress undercurrent. It's the undercurrent that affects everyone, while the more obvious impacts affect one village more than another. New Exit is in the eye of the storm now, but it was a quiet village just 10 years ago. Wainwright is still a pretty quiet village, but they feel the undercurrent. This fundamental shift in land use priorities. They go to the BLM meetings and see maps of 2.8 million acres that have been leased for exploration in the hunting grounds. Development starts on the drawing board, not on the drill rig, and so do the impacts. The people of Wainwright and Atkasuk and Barrow and New Ixit see what's coming across the Colville River. What's coming is a seismic shock to their subsistence view of the world. They've heard that there might be 10 billion barrels of oil under there. For someone who depends on a very different use of that land, it creates a very real impact, and that impact is directly tied to development. And like any other social or cultural impact, it's very hard to show direct cause and effect and to link the two. I believe that is why the federal law leaves a lot of latitude in its approach to impact aid. Sure, and I believe this, that there have to be guidelines and demonstration of impact. Maybe we haven't always done the best possible job of communicating these impacts, but we are making progress on that. The DCED staff congratulated our grants people in this last round of applications, and they said that our impact justifications were much stronger than in the past. As I've stated, it's very hard to prove a direct link between a seismic crew marching across the tundra and a change of behavior of animals or humans in the area. We can't do it. The legislature can't do it. And yet, that is the kind of hardwired relationship that between activities and impacts that the sponsor of this bill wants to require. If that's what he wants, then his argument is not with us, and it is not with the program as it operates now. His argument is with a federal law that provides this money in the first place. His argument is with Senator Stevens, who saw the need for impact assistance at the local level and created the program. So, I believe that some of the most profound impacts are these very subtle changes in the minds and hearts of our people as they see the industry march across to the west, across the breadbasket of our traditional lands. There are plenty of smaller everyday impacts too. They happen so often we don't even think about them. They might be incidents where we are called on to help the industry. We respond without thinking about it because that's what you do when somebody is in trouble up in the Arctic. Our search and rescue department has flown 200 miles out to sea to medevac someone from a seismic ship. We fly medevacs to remote industry campsites to pick up sick or injured workers. It's happened several times in the past few months. In fact, just last week, our emergency response team saved the life of an oil worker who had both legs trapped in an auger at a remote drilling site. This just happened. He didn't come out of it so good, but he's still alive. And it's because we are the first responders on the North Slope, not the state or the feds or the industry. In fact, some of the life-saving equipment that was used in this rescue was paid for by an NPRA grant. You won't hear about grants like that when you're listening to the bill sponsor. That's because it's a part of the success of the NPRA grant program. One of the most dramatic images of an NPRA impact that you'll ever see is in one of the packets you have on your desk. It's the booklet of photos called North Slope Impacts from Oil and Gas Development. There should be a flag placed in the handout you were given. And if you look at that page and the one after it, you'll see a photo taken in the NPRA last fall. It shows a massive amount of equipment and movable facilities in a staging area at Cape Simpson. Next to that city of equipment is what looks like a tiny shack. And that's what it is. It's a subsistence cabin that marks a hunting area used by a Barrow family for generations. Hundreds of cabins like this dot the tundra in the NPRA. So the next time somebody tries to tell you how far away some of these communities are from Alpine, remember this picture. It's quite a ways from Alpine, too, but it's very close to where lots of our families go every summer to spend time on the tundra and hunt and fish and camp. From the sponsor's presentation on Senate Bill 171, you aren't getting a true picture of what's happening in the NPRA. You're not hearing what the real impacts are, and you're not learning about the vast majority of successful grants that have made this program a success. You're being led to believe that hundreds of thousands of dollars have been sent to communities where they are pocketed without living up to the grant conditions. I didn't hear the sponsor mention one very important thing about all these NPRA grants, and that is that these grants are not funded up front. They are reimbursable. So it's not state dollars at risk if there is poor performance. It's local dollars. If the communities can't show the department legitimate expenses, they don't get the grant money. To me, that sounds like pretty good accountability. So what's this bill really all about? It's about fixing the program. Fixing the program so that very little aid ends up going to the communities. The real intent of this bill, I believe, is to make a political football out of the Impact Aid program. It's a two-step process. First, you take decision-making away from the administrative branch, where decision-making for every other state grant program exists. And I stress that. Every other state program exists through that administrative function. You move the grant reviewing, scoring, and awarding process away from the professionals who do this work every day and into the political realm of the legislature. Second, you ratchet down hard on this slippery concept of impacts. What you end up with is a really tough task for a revolving group of people who are appropriately focused on politics and finance and have plenty of ideas for other ways to use that money. It's a setup. I believe it's a setup for decisions based on politics and not on the subtleties of impacts or the federal intent. This bill creates a timetable for dealing with these grant applications that adds to the problem. This timetable forces you to review and score and award a bunch of grants in the midst of the legislative session. Does the legislature really want to be dealing with village grant applications during the session when you've got things like PPT on your plate? And do you really think that this will yield thoughtful, better decisions? I think your best bet is to work with the department as it is set up currently and to work with us to make the program stronger not to gut it. And I'm sure there are ways to improve the program, and I look forward to that. Some of them are already being put in place. But the approach, as presented by the sponsor of Senate Bill 171, is overkill. All we're asking of the legislature is to preserve a fair, non-political process, and you don't get that by taking the grant professionals out of the picture, the same kind of grants, as I stated earlier, that you trust with every other state grant program. To me, it just doesn't make any sense. It is important to note that Senate Bill 171 does not provide any new definitions or guidelines for judging impacts. It only changes who is reviewing the grant applications. That's what it does. It changes who is reviewing the grant applications. I think you can see how this would add to our concerns that this bill doesn't make anything more fair or more open. If the legislature wants to set up a special subcommittee to review these impact aid grants, it doesn't take a legislative change. A subcommittee, for example, has already been formed by the Senate Finance Committee last year. If legislators are just worried that these communities might be getting too much money, the situation may resolve itself without any legislative action. The federal energy bill passed last year gives the Secretary of Interior the authority to reduce or eliminate any and all bonus or lease payments on the development of NPRA. That not only impacts us, but that would deprive the state as well as our local communities. So that maybe what we should be doing here instead is working together to protect these revenues. We have plenty of reasons to work together on all kinds of resource development issues. The North Slope Borough has been a major supporter of onshore oil and gas development for years. We have sent some of our most effective foot soldiers to work the halls of Congress on opening ANWR. At times, we have cooperated with industry on what they wish on the North Slope, even though our hearts told us not to. If you look at the record, you'll see that we have tried to be strong partners for responsible development. What do we get in return for this effort? In recent years, it seems like we've been faced with a flurry of bills like this, Senate Bill 171, bills that are, in my opinion, nothing more than thinly veiled attempts to punish us for living on the North Slope and for receiving benefits at the same time as we absorb all the impacts from oil and gas activity, activities that send billions of dollars of wealth to the rest of the state. As I stated, we believe in partnerships and in working together, but sometimes it feels less like a partnership and more like a target range, and we're the target. I have met some of you on this committee, and I don't think that is your attitude. But it is the attitude. I believe that it is the attitude behind this piece of legislation. And I hope you don't buy into that attitude or to the bill. It would be a loss for all of us as we try to create a better future for the state of Alaska. A number of people from the NPRA communities are here today, and they have a lot of experience with some of the things that I've mentioned. I want you to know that they are not here on our dime, not on the North Slope Borough's dime. We didn't pay their way. They paid their own way so they could tell you how important the program is to their communities. The mayor of Atkasuk was on her way down here when she had a death in the family and had to turn around. But her written testimony should be a part of your packet in the file. And with that, I want to thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to have this time with the community committee today to hear a different perspective. It means a lot to us having this opportunity, and I really appreciate the time you have given me and the time you are giving to my colleagues so that they can express their input on this bill. Kuyanakpak, and thank you.
Representative Sisna.
I have that look on my face.
Oh, yeah.
we have a chair that is very very wise, and he can see exactly what we're all thinking. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor, I would like to know if it's possible to get a copy of your testimony. It
yes.
does a very good job of explaining your perspective. And
thank you, and yes, I will make it available to you.
If you could drop that off at our office, we'll get it out to each of the committee members.
Yes,
after the meeting.
I'll have staff make that available for you. Thank you, and with that, as I stated, we have other members.
Two more questions.
Okay.
I think Representative Cott has at least one.
I'll think of one, Mr.
Chairman. I'm sorry you had that look.
But thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor, I appreciate you coming before the committee this morning. I've got to say, Mr. Chairman, that is one of the best presentations that I've heard in 14 years down here. Mr. Mayor, you mentioned how the grant application occurs and kind of gave me a different perspective in that you perform the work and then you apply for the grant, and if it's reviewed and looked favorably, then the grant monies are paid to those communities as far as the impact goes. Are you aware, and this may have been a question that should have been directed toward the administration, but are you aware of how many of those applications are actually rejected? I mean, there may be a view here that every application that goes in is written off as approved. I'm just wondering if that's the case, or are there actual grant applications that are disapproved?
I can't answer you directly here, Representative Cotton, but I do have staff that works within our grants division, and they have the history. And I could probably answer you if I wasn't a rookie mayor. I'm just into my fourth month here, so I'll have my staff. I'll direct that question to my staff.
Representative Salmon. Oh, I'm sorry.
Patty Stith, for the record. Yes, we write grant applications every year, and only a few of them get funded. There are a great deal. It just depends on the funding amount that's available each year. And sometimes three or four don't get funded, sometimes 20 don't get funded. It just depends on the funding that is available, but they do get rejected.
Thank you.
Representative Salmon.
Yes. I don't have a question, but basically a statement to make. And early on, a lot of people approached me on this NPRA, and a lot of this subject doesn't apply to, a lot of the other districts in Alaska. But when you hear this gentleman testify, it brings back to the fact that what happens to NPRA and the impact it costs the people in that area also has a direct feeling that the Kuchin people have of the Anwar. I know it's a different situation, but it applies the same, because we are on the same food chain. If you could, imagine that. What they have up there usually go by Arctic Village and Vinitai. So that food chain is also impacted. But on the other hand, the Kuchin people don't get the impact aid, for their fights that they've been fighting for years. For Anwar, so somewhat it's similar, and I kind of sympathize with you, and usually I'm on the other side of the fence on this one, but I have to be with my good friend from our neighbors to the north, and he's been supportive of my idea. We have difference of opinion, but yet he support me regardless of how I feel on this situation, and, you know, I have to, you know, be the same on the other side. So, you know, it's a kind of a double-edged sword. So I, you know, thank you for your testimony. It's very good. It's, you know, heartfelt, and that's how we feel as Wichita people on the Anwar. So thank you.
Representative Simon. I appreciate your comments, and I do agree that we do have parallel feelings. It's the same feeling. I'm glad you understand that. Thank you.
At this point in time, I'd like to add that 2 weeks ago, Senator Stevens was here from Washington, D.C., and we didn't have a CRA meeting scheduled for that week, and had we, I believe he would have testified on this issue. He spent about 45 minutes with us, giving us the history of his involvement with NPRE, going back to his days at Interior, and his desire to see the program continue. But unfortunately, we didn't have any meetings scheduled, and we couldn't hold a special one for him. But I believe we have several other people that have come down here a long way. And thanks again, Mayor.
Thank you again.
Dora Nukop. Give me a hand.
Nukop again.
Nukop, yeah. Morning, Dora.
Good morning. Thank you, and I'd like to make mine short and sweet. I am.
For the record, can you state your name and?
My name is Dora Nukopila, resident of Nuuksed, and I thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak on behalf of my community, and for those that are going to be impacted from industry in the future with the NPRA coming their way. I am a mother of three boys who have great interest of being a hunter like mom and dad in the future. Already, my nine-year-old is anxious to follow mom and dad to go out hunting. Whaling, caribou hunting, fishing, and geese hunting are just some of what we hunt, and it brings food to our table, as well as others that depend on us to harvest for them. Elders that can no longer go out to hunt depend on the residents and subsistence hunters of Nuuksed, as well as those on the North Slope that depend on us to send them fish and caribou and other resources we have to share. And sharing has been a big part of our culture for centuries. And with industry in my backyard, I am afraid that someday my son will have more difficulty in harvesting food for the table, and sharing won't be hard for him, because maybe he might only catch what he can put on the table for his family. With alpine development and the satellites in the construction phase, and the nearest drill rig being only 4.5 miles away from the village of Nuuksed, we see impacts in our everyday life. Impacts to our community did not start with alpine development. It started with our elders some 80 years ago when the Naval Petroleum Reserve was doing seismic. And today we can see that all the abandoned drums that are laying around, those are evidence. And these impacts are visible today, and yet the government has yet not taken into consideration to go back and clean up these old well sites. Let me talk about the land loss that our elders are feeling. There were times when I had driven my mother to Dead Horse to get cheaper gas, because our average gas prices were $4.50 a gallon. And as we drove to Prudhoe, we went through Ulituk, because that's where she was born. And right now her cellar sits under a seawater treatment plant. And she told me of the places where she used to hunt. And let me say that again, where she used to hunt. She talked about all the games that were there, and where she did all the fishing over at Kukbaruk and the Sag River. She talked about all the fishes that she took out from Ulituk. And, you know, it scares me to think that someday I am going to tell my son that as industry moves west, and they are moving rapidly, that someday I am going to tell my son, this is where I used to go fishing. This is where I used to hunt. And it does scare the people of New York City, because this is something I don't want to tell my son, because hunting has been a big part of my family, as well as those that are in the North Slope. There was an elderly lady who wanted to go to Dead Horse to see her allotment, and for 30 years she hasn't been there. And Conoco had flew them over there for her and her family to see her allotment, and she came back really sad. She said, you know, my allotment is fenced. There are infrastructures. And she said, I wanted to pass this on to my kids. And the grandkids said, you know, we can never hunt there. And the legacy of land loss, you know, from our elders is not going to stop with the industry going west. We are losing land to development. We are having to go find new places to hunt. And we're having to go further and to go around infrastructure to hunt. And let me go back to where I was, but you know, especially when the protections were taken out by BLM, there were 79 stipulations, assurances, our protection that were taken out in the Northeast NPRA. These were assurances that were given to us in 98 when that bill was amended. And today, you know, when we heard the ROD and when they took them away, we kind of lost trust in the government, and it kind of gave us a different perspective of what development is going to do. We see a lot of environmental damage to our community. There's so much activity right now, it's overwhelming to our people. And there is social impact that come with that. Our leaders are feeling the effects. They're taking their jobs home. Our children are feeling the effects, because mom and dad are always at the meetings. And if you come to New York City, we have meetings every other day. And it's taken the place of our hunting. And I just don't want to tell my son, this is where I used to hunt. Because there is an impact, and that's we are losing land to development rapidly. I'd like to kind of leave a quote with you that Joe Opakasan said, and I find it very true. Oil does not have to live with us, but that we as Inupiaqs have to live with oil. And I sure want to say more, but I just wanted to kind of share on impacts, and our community has felt very significant impact, and I think New York City being the model for the other villages to follow, you know, it's scary. We are very impacted, and I just really don't have any more to say, but I just hope that you hear what we have to say, because it's, you know, very dear to us, our land and our culture.
Well, thank you, Nora. Are there any questions? Representative Sisna?
I guess what I'm thinking is that we only recently have begun to really get the stories of what happened during World War II out in the Aleutians and the internment of whole villages being moved to another part of the state and kept there without understanding what was going to happen to them, and then going back and finding everything gone and things destroyed. And I must thank the bill sponsor that has made this possible for us to start hearing stories of what's going on right now, not hearing about it 50, 60 years later, when we can't do a better job here, because we must know what's happening throughout Alaska in order for us to do a good job in state policy. And I just thank you for your story. And I invite
you to come to Nooksit, you know, and see firsthand what impact is to our community. And a lot of it starts, you know, just year-round. And I just encourage you to come and visit our community and see firsthand what we go through. And it's different from what you read, just to see the reality of what our people are going through.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Dora.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have Nate Uliman, mayor of the city of Barrow. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning, Representative Folsom, co-chair, committee members. My name is Nathaniel Uliman Jr. I'm the mayor of the city of Barrow. I was the sitting mayor at the time the impact fund got started with what Senator Stevens had approved, and I was one of the committee who first applied for the impacted fund, and it's been a useful tool to keep the city afloat. Right now, because of the way it's set in our general fund, we don't have appropriated fund to start to do the approved grants. We have to pull money out from our general fund, tabling the intent of the fund so we could use the grants to come to the city for economic purposes to help the community and all that, because it's done on reimbursable. When I came back on a couple years ago, about 9 grants were sitting because city wasn't running them like they should. Some of them almost had time lapse, but I was able to convince the council for a line of credit so we could start on the projects. And majority of them are now completed, and some of them are being finished up, like the renovation of the roller rink has been awarded out. The one that's sitting at $65,000 is now being used to do a scope of work. City of Barrow has been impacted a long time. It started back in 1939 when they organized the tribal government Native Village of Barrow. And then in 1958, the same people that ran the village council wanted to be incorporated through the encouragement of the late Eben Hobson. He was the first city mayor and the first borough mayor, and we're carrying out his work. The governing officials and members may have changed, but the local governing body remains the same of what the past tribal officers and city council have started. We've been impacted through PEC 4 when it first started. Our lakes where we used to go fishing back in the 40s when they were doing seismic testing, they used dynamite in those days, and they destroyed four of our closest hunting grounds where we used to go fishing. That's why the whole community has shifted towards Tashakpuk, because that is still the most plentiful area to hunt. There's over 100 cabins, I've heard Edward Iqdal. Myself, I got a fishing camp towards Windrise, 60 miles northwest, southwest of Barrow. I have a summer camp, and my family have five native allotments inland where our fish camp is. That has been impacted because the whole area on the lease sale was bought by TransCanada. So all my life, I've been impacted through our subsistence hunting and our community. When Bruder Bay was established, they hired, I was one of the original ones, to go work at Bruder week on, week off. I worked up there 10 years. And I have seen impact from day one on North Slope, not only as a subsistence hunter, elected official, but living and working up there. I'm retired from ARCO. And when I was working week on, week off, I was elected official from 72 to 89. 12 years as the city mayor, because it was before, in the 70s, before the impact funded started, city didn't have any money to operate essential services to the community. So on my week off, I worked with no pay to the city for 11 years. Trying to provide service everybody is entitled to. Because of the oil industry, we were impacted. When we started Native Village of Barrow, there was no bounties. They tried to put us up, make us a Indian reservation. The Inupiat voted that down. They said, our hunting area is from Padu Island into Canada, all the way down to Point Hope and Anaktuvik. That's where they travel. That's where their hunting grounds are at, that when they said my mother or my grandmother used to live here in that area. We have faced up to realities that we could impact it from, based on our powers from Title 29 to an incorporated city. And we have brought in new recreation centers. We didn't have any in the past. We maintain the cemeteries. And we have opened a boat ramp, which is retractable because we live in Arctic Ocean. When we, on one of our first grants, we got from NPRA, we built a boat ramp that's supposed to withhold the ice when it comes in and the storms in summer. It never worked. So nowadays we're using retractable boat ramps where we push them out, and the city does it not from 8 to 5, but 24/7 during summertime when it's in use. So the city staff put in lots of overtime trying to provide service. We have Pirawik Gym Community Center, Tupik Park, Pirawik Park, Port Walks, Boys and Girls Club, Barrow Youth Center, Roller Rink. These weren't around when I was growing up. Our playground was the outside, no matter how cold it was. We didn't have a building to go to. But these are some things you take for granted. And through the impact fund, we made it a reality. And we appreciate what Senator Stevens have done. I filed a lawsuit against Senator Sheffield when he first started to pull the whole impacted fund into a permanent fund. And with the backing of North Slope and the other communities, we won that. We have fought tooth and nail, and I thought I would come back 15 years later to fight for the same thing I fought for 30 years plus ago, but with a different legislative body. And I oppose the Senate Bill 171 because it's just going to hurt us. And we're finding ways, since we don't have any sales tax to speak of or receive any revenue sharing, municipal aid, or fuel assistance, we have to provide those first to our community and foregoing future projects. We haven't had a major project in a long time. The first one we're doing now is a maintenance garage to destroy the automobile. We have lots of them that never left since they start bringing them up. So we're going to start taking them off the streets and destroying them to make our community more visible, and for the tourists that comes up and the visitors, and for the community that themselves that has dead vehicles in their lots and on the street right away. And we're still trying to provide services within our means, but we don't have the assistance of the state like the other communities except for the NPRA. Thank you.
Are there any questions for the mayor? Thank you, Mayor.
Okay.
We have four more people signed up to testify, and then we're going to offer Senator Welkin a few minutes. I request that we try to limit it to 5 minutes each. John Hobson. Morning, John. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
For the record, my name is John Hobson, Jr., president of Olona Corporation, a village corporation. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Hobson, Jr. I am the president and CEO of Olona Corporation, the village corporation of Wainwright, which is 88 miles southwest of Barrow. I am a hunter, I am a fisherman, and I am a whaler. I am a member of the Wainwright Whaling Captains Association. I am a former North Slope Borough Assemblyman. I'm also a former city mayor and councilman for the city of Wainwright. I am in active local organizations such as the Volunteer Search and Rescue and a longtime member of the Volunteer Fire Department. Wainwright is a second-class city with powers of recreation, boats and harbors, and cemetery sites. Other local government services are provided by the North Slope Borough. I speak in opposition to Senate Bill 171 because it is designed to make us less eligible for NPRA Impact Aid grants at a time when oil development is spreading across the North Slope faster than ever and changing our subsistence way of life. It is hard to separate the effects of NPRA activities from other oil development, including offshore. It is also hard to separate the effects of current NPRA activities from those in the past or the ones that we see coming our way in the near future. We think, when we think about oil and gas development, we don't separate one kind from another. They are all part of the same thing, a big change in the way we live and a change to our traditional subsistence lifestyle. There have been generations of seismic activity in places where we hunt, where we fish. These hunting grounds extend far to the south and east as well as west of the village. The elders tell us how the movements of the animals have been changed by seismic activity over the years. Sometimes when the migrations are disrupted, they do not return to their previous path until after noise stops, so the animals are harder for us to get. We get caribou from the Teshekpuk herd, and we hunt for birds from that overwinter in the eastern part of NPRA. These animals do not come around so much like they used to, and we have to travel farther to find them. That means it is more difficult and more expensive for us in terms of travel and time away from jobs and families. There is a very real cost to us. When the North Slope Board does their census, they ask about subsistence activities. They found that more than 80% of the people in Wainwright get at least half of their food from subsistence. So it is not something we do in our spare time for fun. We grew up with subsistence, and it is a part of who we are. There is not much in our local store anyways, but we hunt and fish as a big part of our livelihood. We depend on wildlife for our meals. People in Wainwright also don't have many jobs for income, so we really need access to fishing and hunting and whaling. The borough's official unemployment rate for our community is 35%, but what we can tell as residents, the real unemployment rate is more like 60% or higher, depending on the time of year. And that rate is rising since the borough has to cut back on jobs and services in the last 5-6 years. We may have more jobs than a lot of villages around Alaska, but about 20% of our families live below the poverty line in terms of cash income, and they really feel when we get more expensive. Really feel it when it gets more expensive to go out after caribou and other animals. That is why NPRA grant projects like our boat launch are so important to us. Access to many of these best hunting and fishing areas is by boat. And we really need a decent boat launch to get our boats in the water. It is not a recreational boat launch, but a health and safety issue and a matter of survival for us to harvest wildlife from the ocean and the inland areas. I understand that politics has to do a lot with this legislation, and I can't give you much advice on that, but I hope you won't be fooled into believing that the people of the villages are rich and streets are paved with gold, when in fact the streets are always paved with ice most of the year, and we live pretty simple lives. Our life has already been changed by oil and gas development. Some of the changes are good, like better schools and pretty good basic services in our community. Some of the changes have really hurt our culture and put our kids and our language and our traditions at risk. We don't completely understand how industry activity and village impacts all work together, neither do you. So, and I hope you don't pretend that you can sit here and tell us what impacts are in our villages. It gets pretty complicated when you put two totally different cultures together. We're just trying to hold on to our culture for ourselves and our kids. I hope you won't make it any harder taking away a source of revenue that may make a difference in our community. Thank you.
We have any questions for John? Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Raymond Nyakok. quick, sir. Good morning.
Thank you, Co-Chair, House of Representatives. Good morning. I am Vice Mayor to the City of Nooksack. Our mayor could not attend as he was preparing for the spring wheelet in Barrow. He uses his snow machine to drive to Barrow, and there was a meeting there that we had to attend, and we had requested a corridor because we knew the current exploration is going to directly impact his journey to Barrow, and it's all seasonal. And he also must return home before the snow melts. Anyways, going back to my testimony, my name is Raymond Eckel Jr., son of Raymond Eckel Sr. and Marie Kunagnana Eckel. My grandfather's birthplace is near the Alpine development at a place called Nilik at the mouth of the Nechilik Channel. That's how it is spelled in the maps. His name is Arthur Dr. Nechuk. And my grandmother's birthplace is between Wainwright and Barrow in what is called the Utukak region. Her name is Hester Tuklin Nechuk. My grandfather on my mother's side, his birthplace is approximately 4 miles from the mouth of the Anuktuwak River. His name is Samuel Hugo originally, but was changed to Samuel Kunukmana by the census takers for whatever reasons are unknown to me. I would almost recognize that as a impact just because he was born in the area. And my grandmother, who is still with us today, was born at Cross Island, the current home base for whalers in Nooksack. And currently, the residents of Nooksack are expected to attend 20 to 25 meetings a month, nearly at all levels, you know, the local, state, and the federal level. This is in a tiny community of nearly 500, and many of the attendees are elders who have testified time and time again for the past 30 years since they resettled the area. I remember as a little boy, the governor at the time had paid a visit to the village while with the residents were still living in tents, and he had hoped for a good relationship with the newly established village, and I am hoping this will continue. For instance, I had a choice where I should be this past weekend. I had to make a decision. Should I attend the hearing, or should I go out and hunt for food for my family and to possibly trade for other foods that are not available in the Nooksack area? For instance, there are some sheepfish in Wainwright that I really like, and it comes pretty close with Arctic Cisco. You know, when you put those two together, I'm pretty sure I can eat both of them all at one sitting. And this is clearly an impact. I made a decision to be here. You know, my family in Barrow wanted some caribou meat, but when I was to Barrow on my way here, I seen some caribou on the table, and I'm hoping that he will still have a little bit more when I get back to Nooksack. So my first priority is going to be to hunt for that caribou and send it on home, because he's a much healthier person. My dad, my mom, they are much healthier because it's the diet that they grew up with, and I see that as a impact related to NPRA development at its present phase. I thank you for your time at this hour. As I said, my name is Raymond Nacock Jr., and I'd sure like to get home as soon as I can.
Thank you, Raymond. Any questions for Raymond? Co-Chair Thomas?
Just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your presentation and your introduction is traditionally the way the Tlinkits go. We usually say that I'm Kawish Gao, Gunachtadi from the village of Klukwan Tlingit. So, and it's good to see that, you know, when you speak to other native people, that's traditionally how we introduce ourselves. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
I thank you all for this opportunity to hear from some of us. I'm pretty sure there are a whole line of people that are behind me that would like this opportunity. As I said before, you are welcome to our community to speak with some of our elders, our hunters, and the people who sit at our table when we come to eat. You know, that's where we'd like you to come. Anything else?
Thank you again.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Robert Sudam.
And my brother Pete.
Good morning, Co-Chair Olson, Co-Chair Thomas, committee members. My name is Robert Sudam, and I'm a wildlife biologist with the North Slope Borough's Department of Wildlife Management. I've lived in Barrow. Barrow's been my home and my office for the past 16 years. And in those 16 years, I've been able to complete a master's degree through UAF, and this year I'll finish a PhD through the University of Washington. In my years of living and working in Barrow, I've been able to spend a great deal of time within the NPRA, hunting, fishing, studying fish and wildlife, and also observing oil and gas activities. So I appreciate the opportunity this morning to talk a little bit about NPRA. On its surface, SB 171 is about impacts, in particular about mitigating impacts. In the previous speakers, you've heard a great deal about how oil and gas activities have affected people. And I'd like to briefly talk about data gaps that exist for fish and wildlife, the different species that occupy the NPRA, and also how the North Slope Borough is attempting to fill those data gaps. Typically, research agencies that permit activities, oil and gas activities on the North Slope, they want to information. They're looking for information to inform their decisions, to make the best decisions possible. They want to efficiently and appropriately mitigate impacts, and they want information to do this. Unfortunately, there are many data gaps in NPRA, and so that job is very difficult for these resource managers to undertake. And the reason for this is that data gathering is not a priority of the land manager of the Bureau of Land Management for NPRA. Another reason is because there are few agency scientists that actually reside in NPRA or on the North Slope. For example, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has only one biologist that lives and works in the North Slope Borough. Okay, only one. He does a good job, but he's only one person. And ADF&G is actually doing a great job compared to the Department of Interior agencies. Okay, they don't have anybody that lives and works on the North Slope. That includes BLM, and it includes Fish and Wildlife Service. There aren't scientists up there collecting the information that's needed. And collecting baseline information, as I mentioned earlier, is incredibly important, and especially in the Arctic, that we need a good baseline data that extend over a great deal of time. And the reason for that is, well, there's a few different reasons. One is that the Arctic is variable. Okay, there's a great differences from one year to the next. And so that great variability means that we need an extended data set so that we can understand how the system works. The other issue is something that the legislature has been talking about recently, which is climate change. There are these changes that are occurring now in the Arctic. Okay? So what we're trying to do as resource managers, as scientists, is we're trying to sort out what the impacts are from climate change, which makes it very difficult to also understand what the impacts are on fish and wildlife to from oil and gas activity. So it's very difficult, and that's one of the reasons why we need a large data set. Essentially, we want to make sure that our observations of impact are attributable to the right culprit. Okay, we don't want to blame oil and gas for an impact when, in fact, it may be climate change that has caused a decline in a bird species or a change in distribution of caribou. And in order to do that, we need data. So because the federal and state agencies aren't collecting that information, the North Slope Borough has decided that it's important to apply for impact funds in order to fill these data gaps. And I'll give you a few examples of what the borough has been doing, the studies that the borough has been doing. We've been looking at the movements of caribou from the Teshikpuk Lake herd. We've been monitoring the distribution, abundance, and reproductive success of various waterfowl species in MPRA. We're determining the movements and habitat use of important fish species, especially around Teshikpuk Lake. We're also looking, collecting data on contaminants. There are very many data gaps on hydrocarbon contaminants, especially on the North Slope. And we're collecting information on how people use the land. Okay? Even though we're doing these studies, there are many data gaps that still exist. Okay, we still need adequate baseline information on many different species of animals and plants. We need to learn more about archaeological sites before they're destroyed, before more ice cellars are put underneath gravel pads. We need better information on the hydrology and subsistence use patterns. So again, we cannot adequately predict the effects of climate change without data, and we still do not understand the cumulative effects from all of the different activities that are going on up there. Again, the agencies have not done an adequate job of collecting baseline information, and the North Slope Borough is trying to fill those data gaps with MPRA impact funds. Does oil and gas activity benefit people on the North Slope? Of course it does. There's lots of positive things that come from it, but there are also some negative impacts. In my mind, the point of today's hearing is to talk about the best way to mitigate those impacts. In his presentation on Tuesday, Senator Wilken said that SB 171 would make the process of evaluating proposals more objective. And in my opinion, if SB 171 passes, the decisions about funding mitigation proposals are actually going to become less objective, okay? And not more. We need to collect baseline information, and if SB 171 goes forward, it seems like that opportunity may be compromised. I encourage you all to strengthen a system that already is in place, a system that already works, and not to fix something that's not broken. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment this morning.
Oh, thank you, Robert. Representative Sisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and my question is this. I'd like to know if either the state, and maybe hear what you believe would be true for both the state and for the borough, are looking at toxicity levels in subsistence foods and maybe looking at potential sources of toxicity and sort of how where they might, well, source. That probably says enough.
Representative Sisna, through the co-chair. A fair amount of data has been collected on contaminants and subsistence use species. Many of those contaminants have been heavy metals or organic type of contaminants, pesticides and herbicides and those types of things. But there's amazingly few data on hydrocarbon contaminants. There's amazingly few data on the components of oil that might get into the food chain. And there's definitely a need to collect those type of data. And one of the impact funds the borough has received is trying to do that, especially in fish as a starting point, so that we do have baseline data. So if and when oil and gas activities move into an area, we'll be able to understand whether there has been contamination from oil activity.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Robert is a biologist, wildlife biologist. Kind of a couple questions combined here. We've seen studies that show that there's more wildlife around the Prudhoe Bay area now than there was before Prudhoe Bay was developed. I think along with that is the fact that, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, that private industry is helping to provide. You'd mentioned that there's only one biologist up there, but private industry provides biologists up there too to help. Do you work with those biologists, and do you feel that there's more wildlife around that area? Do you substantiate those claims?
Representative Newman, through the chair, certainly the caribou herds in the Central Arctic herd that's in the oil fields has definitely increased. In fact, we often mention that it looks like oil and gas activity on the Central Arctic herd hasn't had a major impact, that the caribou seem to be doing well and the population level. One of the things that we're learning more and more is that impacts to animals may not be necessarily on the number of animals that are there. That for hunters to go out and get caribou, it may be more difficult now because the caribou are deflected. There's still lots out there, but now they're 30 or 40 miles away from a village instead of 2 or 3 or 4 miles away. So we're trying to understand those impacts. As I mentioned in my presentation, one of the things that we don't understand about oil and gas effects is what the cumulative situation will be. That right now Central Arctic caribou herd are doing well, and we hope they continue. But oil and gas activities are moving into an area where a herd, the Teshikpuk herd, hasn't experienced those activities before. Perhaps they'll habituate to the activities, we're not sure. But that herd is important to almost every village on the North Slope, and so we want to make sure that we have good baseline data so that we can predict what the impacts will be, but more importantly, mitigate those impacts. And we can't do that without good information.
Just follow up. Quick comment. I know that I took a quick trip up to Prudhoe to see the facilities firsthand, how they work, and there was caribou standing all over the place, bears. So, comment. Thank you, Chair.
Absolutely.
Anybody else? Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Last up, David Smith.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. My name is David Smith. I'm the city administrator in Nootsiek, and as you have been told, we're 2 or 3 miles inside the NPRA boundaries. The city government is inundated at the current time with correspondence and documentation of what's going on in our immediate area. We get 65 or more documents a month that need review, and some of them need comment. In addition to that, we are inundated with meetings. Most of these meetings are in August and January. I believe we had 14 meetings last August. We have 30 to 40 meetings a year, and we have many other meetings that aren't major, but the people do come to town, and we are interfacing right now with 4 different members from ConocoPhillips that see us on a weekly basis. Population of Nootsiek, I believe, is in the low 400s, but we do have 50 to 100 transient workers staying at a work camp. They're there from December through April, and we're told that this camp is in a process of doubling. So right now, we're figuring that we will have 150 outside transient oil workers next winter as the MPRA activities become more dominant. The city government has 4 full-time employees. We have 4 to 6 part-time employees. There are 5 or 6 local residents that are employed at Alpine or Kuparik, and we have 10 or 15 people that work seasonally for about 60 days building and maintaining the ice roads. The interesting thing about employment is as our young people or our families get employment in Alpine or Coparic, which is only 8 to 20 miles away, they move to Fairbanks. So it's possible that our population is either stabilized or decreasing, because once you get a high-paying oil field job, you move to town. This month, we lost, we're in the process of losing our local minister. He got a high-paying job, and he's only 8 miles from Alpine, but it's difficult to get to work. He's going to go to Fairbanks, get better housing, better medical, and better opportunities for his family as a whole. There was some comment earlier in the meeting about the gas line. The city of Nwitsiq is the last few weeks of obtaining a gas line from Alpine. $10 million of this money came from NPRA, but I think it's important to stress that the North Slope Borough also put $10 million into that project, and we're told that the fee will be $125 a month. It'll be a service fee, and it'll start in September. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Do we have any questions for David? Representative Sismith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what you don't need is an idea for more work. But I'm just wondering if, in fact, you if there's any sort of documents that you already have put together that outline some of these kinds of requirements, the data that you have to keep, the meetings you have to attend. Do you have any records of those that already are done? Because I don't want to ask for something that you already adding to the load you already have.
We're accumulating now historical data on cumulative impacts. Part of that would be a number of meetings. We haven't been accumulating the number of documents, but it is mentioned every month in our reports to council. So I would say the data is available. If requested it, we could certainly come up with the numbers.
Okay. And
follow up?
Mr. Chair. And what I would love to ask is, do you have, is it easy to get copies of your report to the council, and is that privileged information?
No, that would be available. We could provide that next week with no problem.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkin, would you like 5 minutes?
It feels good to stand up.
Morning, Gary Wilkin, State Senator, District E. Thank you for the time again this morning, committee members, co-chairs. I appreciate it. And I want to also thank the people that came today and to help to make this bill better. Their testimony is heartfelt, and I take it in the spirit to which it's brought to this room to make a bill better. I'll just take one exception to one thing that the mayor said. I take great exception to the comment that this is punitive. I won't let that stand on the record without a rebuttal. I'm very clear. This legislation is about, one, following federal law, two, about spreading the wealth of NPRA, first, not to just the needs of one area of our state, but, excuse me, let me start. This is about following federal law, and secondly, this is to spread the we need to not fund the wants of one area of our state, but the needs of the entire state. I have people in my office every day asking for money, people that truly need it. And if that money isn't available for the rest of the state because we're not following federal law, that's what this legislation is about. This is not meant to be punitive, and I wanted to make sure that's on the record. I have three or four other things, and I'll just take a couple of minutes. Mr. Clow talked about alternative revenue sources. You have in your packets the 4356. It's true there's a minimal amount of capital in the last 6 years. But I think it's important to note that 4356 properties have provided $1.2 billion to the North Slope. This is the ad valorem tax that we put on oil and gas properties. And if you just look at the second slide, you can see that just this year it's $189 million. This is the entire pie is general fund, and the way the 4356 is set up, that if you have a tax on oil and gas properties in your community or your borough, you can get an equal amount by the mill levy from that general fund pot of money, which is created by the ad valorem tax. So you can see there on slide two, the first pie chart, that the North Slope Borough last year had $189 million. And then you can see that my borough, $4.3 million, Valdez, $13 million, Kenai, $7 million. And what's left is the $46 million that we appropriate in our budget process. The third slide is just the municipality take, which is just a subset of the first. So you can see that that's a significant revenue source of averaging almost $190 million over the last 6 years for the North Slope Borough. The thought that the program disagree with that, for the last 2 years, I have professionally, nicely, and formally asked for the committee notes on their deliberations on how they define impact, so that I could see what went through the minds of the raiders. For 2 years, I've been stonewalled. They've been destroyed, not available. So I've been able to go back and have a sense of what they were thinking about. And that's unfortunate, but that's the way the department has chosen to provide information to me. It hasn't been available. A couple things about the impacts. Tekushpuk Lake, as we all know, has a lease sale coming. The wants and needs of the North Slope Borough, the environmental community, haven't fallen on silent ears, on deaf ears. There's 389,000 acres that's going to be leased, and out of that, the requirement is that the leasing companies can develop no more than 1% of that area. So 1% of 389,000 acres is what's available for oil and gas development. I think that should be part of the record. There's the thought that there's the march across NPRA is perhaps it needs to be clarified a little. Back in the 50s, there was a great deal of seismic work done. That's been halted for years. And today, the seismic work reaches out from the border of NPRA about 35 miles. It's done by non-invasive acoustic machinery. It's done only in the winter on ice and frozen ground, so there is no footprint left behind. The Tekushpuk Lake caribou herd, our fishing game did a study back in 2004. This is a chart that shows you, this is 1970, this is 2003. Seismic has been occurring in the late, mid to late 1995 to 2000, all the way up, of course, to today. This line here that you see is the Tekushpuk Lake caribou herd. So here's how it's growing. This is how it's grown since seismic began. So perhaps seismic has some impact. Certainly hasn't at this study done by our fish and game. And with that, co-chairs and committee members, that's my comments. And again, I thank everybody for being here and for your time and their time, because it's not easy to come here and spend a couple of days and participate. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Any questions for Senator Wilkin? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I really appreciate the work you've done on this. It's very difficult situation here. Representative Olson, Chair Olson, had commented that he had recently talked to Senator Stevens about this. You had commented that this is a fix of a federal solution. But there seems to be a split on how that fix should be done, with Senator Stevens maybe having a different thought process on this. How do you comment on that?
I would, I can't put words in Senator Stevens' mouth, but I would hope that Senator Stevens would want us to follow federal law and follow it with state law that was created in 19 and verified 1986, and by regulations that have been promulgated and vetted in public, and that's what this legislation does.
Quick follow-up.
Certainly.
Have you asked Senator Stevens to look at this and try and fix the situation at his level?
When Senator Stevens was in town a couple of weeks ago, we had a conversation about this legislation. He understands my concerns. I understand his.
Thank you.
Coacher Thomas.
Thank you. Senator, you made a comment about, you know, we all hear that people coming in to get the money, but under your plan, 20 that money goes in the permanent fund, and we recently saw a survey that says leave that permanent fund alone. How would you propose to take that out of there to get it to the people that want it? That's, you know, that's the delay. When you made that comment, I said, good idea, but I think, you know, you read the same survey that I did, or would you allow it? Would you look at other ideas rather than going into the to share it out somehow the way?
Well, a couple of steps. The money that comes from our mineral resources section, section 15, paragraph 9, or vice versa, we can't do anything about that. That's the Constitution. So we're now putting 6%. We need to get that to 25 because we all raised our hand and said we'd do it. And so that there's not much argument about that. That has to happen. The other piece is how do we get the money back out? I'm on record, Senate Bill 88, I believe the permanent fund earnings are available with a majority vote of this place when needed, as needed, and we're held accountable for that vote. So really two separate issues, Co-Chair.
I was just wondering how, if I may, just how we're going to spend it. I agree with you, though. Okay.
Yeah.
Representative Sister.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator, for bringing something before us that allows there to be a conversation that needs to happen, because there's so many different things that have been occurring that actually bring a great deal of wealth to the state from one region of the state. I mean, it's really pretty remarkable that we've all been able to enjoy so much wealth from the petroleum industry and that incredible Prudhoe Bay brought untold wealth really to this state and certainly other states. Actually, we must never forget how much of that wealth has been distributed throughout actually the world, and maybe this state actually has received less than we maybe could have, but I'm not going to worry about that. I guess one of the things I'm not sure about is whether or not this legislation would be precedent setting in that we've seen different groups in the state realize real gain, make some substantial revenue sources for their own corporations or groups because they lived in areas where there was some potential large resource development that was possible, other things than besides petroleum. Would, I guess my question, what potential is there that this would set a precedence that in fact we could share the wealth of the state, and I hope that we would be sharing it with every single community in the state equally, so that we really do have fairness across the state. But would this set a precedence, do you think?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. And it's a good one. And I would say no, only because I think we need to remember that this is the only program that steps in front of our permanent fund. And the suggestion earlier was that, well, we do all the other grants one way, we should do it this way, just do the same. Not the case, because this particular program is in front of our permanent fund and therefore deserves the elevation of accountability and public disclosure. And so anything we did here wouldn't create a cascade effect to the next program unless it happened to be one that someone put in front of our permanent fund. And I would qualify all that by saying that's a potato chip salesman talking and not a lawyer. So
I'd like to close testimony right now and bring it back to the committee. Representative Sisna, do you have something you'd like to
Well, I guess it is a comment.
Thank you, Senator.
And thank you, Senator. And that is that one of the things that I have observed is the inward looking that we tend to have as the permanent fund gains in its powerful capturing of more and more dollars. And the larger it gets, the more we focus inward. And I would hope that we're thinking of the people of Alaska as that which should, in the perfect world, capture our attention.
What is the will of the committee? Well, I guess it's the will of the co-chair and I. We've talked at this at length. We believe Senator Wilkins has raised a number of good points, but we also believe that the past problems in the administration of the grants probably falls at the department level. And it would be our intent to see Senator Wilkin, the department, the North Slope Borough, the impacted villages, sit down and see what they can negotiate their way through on this. I've got a strong feeling that a number of Senator Wilkins' points may be able to be negotiated out amongst the bodies that are involved, and I think that would probably be the most efficient way to handle it. And I think on that,
and a member from this committee.
Pardon me?
A member from this committee.
And a member or two members. We can sort that out with Senator Wilkin, but I think we got a meeting to go to now. We're out of here. Wow.